guess I could put it back a little bit.
Okay, we're ready to start. You can ask, welcome Tim and Sasha and anybody else who might be watching, ask them if they can see the live show.
Tell me when we're ready. I've never spoken to a water bottle before. We're ready?
Yeah, we're ready.
Hello, welcome. Tim and Sasha, are you there? Can you see? So we are going to speak about how to go to from the stage of unconsciousness to the stage of consciousness. And what that means is that often in our practice of Krishna consciousness, our sadhana, our service, we're often in an unconscious state. We're not aware of what we're doing. We're not aware of the meaning of what we're doing. And we're not consciously aware of our goal or what we're intending to achieve. So I would like to relate this to japa. And I'm going to ask you three questions. And these three questions can immediately bring you from this unconscious, mindless state into a conscious state. So let's first start with a definition of mindlessness. In Buddhism we have mindfulness, so mindlessness is the opposite. Mindfulness is being present with what you're doing, being conscious. Like we say, be here now. You are fully present with what you're doing, you're conscious of what you're doing, you're fully into it. So mindlessness would be pretty much the opposite, that you're physically going through the activity, but you're not really there. And that could be just a neutral position. Your just mind is, it's somewhere else. It's not in a bad place. It's just not focused on what you're doing. Or it could be a very negative thing where your mind is actually focused on something that is detrimental to your bhakti. So the first thing you can do when you're in this situation, or even if you are not in this situation, but you're preparing to do some service, and I will use japa as an example here, that you ask yourself a question. And I have written the question down on the board, on a piece of paper, so you can all see it. And can you see the question? The question is, what am I doing? Okay, so if you have a pen and paper, I suggest you write this question down, because it's an important question. So, what am I doing? So let's say you're sitting down and you're getting ready to chant Hare Krishna, either japa or kirtan. And you ask yourself this question, what am I doing? Well, according to our philosophy, what is happening is that Krishna is present in his name and you're coming into the presence of Krishna. Just like if you go to the temple, you go to a holy place, or if you're a Catholic, you go to the Vatican, or you're a Jew or a Muslim, you go to your holy place. When you're there, you strongly feel the presence of God. And it's a very sobering experience. It's an emotional experience. So Srila Prabhupada has explained, similarly, when we chant the name of Krishna, then, hello Damien, 108, and Hinas, and who else is here? Of course, Manu is here, and Tim is here, and Sasha is here. So, Srila Prabhupada said, when you chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, you should feel basically how you feel when you go in a temple and the curtains are drawn and you see Krishna in his form of the deity, or you go to any holy place. You should feel that way. Now, often, when we chant, when I chant, when you chant, we all have this experience, we don't feel that way. Often, we're totally disconnected from what we're doing, or should I say unconscious or mindless in what we're doing. We're chanting, we're not connected with the fact that Krishna is present in his name, that Krishna is dancing on our tongue. I mean, imagine, we are personally in the presence of God. He is there. He is non-different than his name. But we're not always conscious of that. And therefore, when we're not conscious of that, our chanting reflects that, and we can be totally distracted. And we can be totally uninterested in our chanting. We may chant, we sometimes see in ourselves, and we see it in others, that we're chanting as if the Maha Mantra doesn't mean anything. Or we're chanting as if it's just a botheration, it's getting in the way of something more important that I have to do. So that does not reflect what I'm doing. It doesn't reflect the reality that Krishna's there. Obviously, if Krishna were next to me, I wouldn't say, Krishna, I'm really busy, I've got a lot of things to do, I'm going to neglect you now. We wouldn't say that. But sometimes when we chant, it's like that. It's like someone comes to our house and we neglect him. We call Krishna, Krishna, come, please, dance in my tongue, dance in my heart. And then we neglect him. We wouldn't. If we were conscious of that, we wouldn't. Obviously, we wouldn't do that. So, again, I'm going to show you. First question. What am I doing? What's going on here? What's actually happening? Before you chant, just meditate on that. What's going on? What is it? What is this holy name? What's it all about? And of course, you can do that with any service, whatever you're doing. You know, just be aware. What is the significance? Now, the next question, I'm going to write it down. The next question seems almost identical to the last question I asked. And the next question, it's different, and I'll explain why, although it seems the same. Next question is, what is the meaning? So if you like, you can write that down. And I will explain the difference between what am I doing and what is the meaning. So at least, it's obvious in relation to the holy name. The holy name, there is a meaning to the Maha Mantra, just like Srila Prabhupada is often said. It's like a child crying out to its mother. Or he has said, we're begging Krishna for service. Another time he said, when we chant, we are saying, Krishna, my friend, my friend, my friend. Another time Srila Prabhupada said, when we're chanting, we're saying, Krishna, please accept me. Please accept me. Please just accept me as your devotee. Don't kick me away. Allow me to do service. Give me the opportunity to serve you. So, of course, there are many meanings to the holy name, and as you go deeper, it can become more and more esoteric, in which the holy name is revealing our complete identity as an eternal servant of Krishna in the spiritual world. But the point is, if we sit down and chant and we reflect on what the meaning is, then it connects emotionally. But if we're disconnected from the meaning, we tend to disconnect emotionally. And then we can get back into this position of, I don't want to chant, I have better things to do. I'm bored, I'd rather do something else. Or I just chant and I start talking to somebody. I'm not connected. If I'm sitting there praying, Krishna, please accept me, please accept me, please accept me. If that's what I'm connected with, I wouldn't just get up and start talking to someone about the weather or whatever. Obviously. So chanting, if we see chanting as what it is, it's this deep, intense connection with Krishna in a mood of prayer, supplication, of begging, Krishna, please accept me. Krishna, please engage me. Oh, Radha, oh, Krishna, engage me. Oh, Krishna, my friend, my friend. Oh, Radha Raman, oh, lover of Krishna. Accept me, allow me to serve you. Make me your eternal servant. Humble me at your feet. So much meaning is there in the holy name. So just try to notice when you're chanting. Like tomorrow when you chant, or tonight if you chant. Just notice if you're connected with the meaning. And if you're not connected with the meaning, just stop when you remember, when you become conscious of it. Just stop and connect with it. And you'll see immediately everything changes. There was one devotee who told us that, but when we were discussing this point with her, she said, when I sit down to chant, before I begin chanting, I say, Swagatam Nam Prabhu. Swagatam means welcome. And Nam Prabhu, that is the holy name. The Lord, Master, the holy name, Nam Prabhu. Swagatam Nam Prabhu. And she said, just by saying, I'm welcoming Krishna, I'm welcoming you in the holy name. She said, just by doing that, totally transformed her japa. Made a difference between day and night. So, it's a difference between being, excuse me, conscious of what you're doing and what it means, and being mindless, unconscious, disconnected. So, I often like to think of chanting as an intense form of prayer, an intense form of connection with Krishna. Because just the idea of the word prayer, it's a very serious and sobering practice. And we don't usually have the connotation of praying and simultaneously doing other things. Praying and doing my email, and praying and talking to my friends, and praying and thinking about what I'm going to do today, and praying and thinking about how somebody hurt me yesterday, and all the kinds of things that tend or can go on within our minds when we're chanting, when we're disconnected. And so many devotees have told me that the biggest problem they have when they chant is what? You already know what it is. It's controlling the mind, focusing on the name. But you can see that if you enter the mood of prayer, automatically there's a focus, because the connotation of prayer is connection, it's seriousness. Connotation of prayer is conscious. How could you seriously pray and not be conscious of what you're praying about? How could you be in a disengaged mood and be praying? Then you wouldn't mean it. So when we chant the name of Krishna, we want to be connected from the heart. We want to mean what we're saying. Because sometimes we don't mean what we're saying. We're saying, oh, Krishna, engage me in your service. But we're not really praying for that. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master, he once said, chanting is not lip deep, it's heart deep. And what that means is that we express ourselves. We express emotion, we express feeling from the heart. We don't express it from the lips. Of course, you can express it verbally, you can express it in writing, but the real expression is coming from the heart. And the heart, once it comes, when it comes from the heart, then it's expressed in writing or it's expressed in speech. But if it's expressed in writing or speech and it doesn't exist in the heart, then it doesn't communicate. Just like if you tell somebody, I love you. If you don't really mean it, they're not going to believe it, because they can feel you don't mean it. They don't feel anything when you say it. But if you really mean it, then they'll feel it. In the same way, we're chanting the holy name. If we don't really mean, Krishna, please engage me in your service. Krishna, please accept me. Krishna, my friend. If we don't really mean that, then it doesn't communicate to Krishna. It doesn't even communicate to ourselves, to our own soul. So that's why often when we're chanting, after we finish chanting, if we've been mindless, we don't really feel that we connected with Krishna while we were chanting. We don't really feel much different after chanting than we did before we chanted, because we really weren't connected. We were mindless. So what is the meaning? Now, if you take it in terms of another service, think of a particular service you do. You think, what is the meaning? If you're doing outreach and you're going to bring people into Krishna consciousness, there's a lot of deep meaning there. That this person has been in the material world for lifetimes. This person has, now you are not giving them a chance to come in connection with Krishna. You're giving them a chance to end the repetition of birth and death. You're giving them a chance to come in contact with a pure devotee. You're giving them a chance for actual knowledge that can solve their problems, their ultimate problems. There's deep meaning to that. So just by being conscious of that, in that activity, it empowers you. And it changes the mood of that activity. So that's just one example. I want to stick with chanting here, but that's one example. Now, I'm going to ask the third question. allergy season here in Alachua. Vikram, welcome. Excuse me while I take care of the allergy. Third question. I'm going to write this down for you. So if you have paper and you would like to write this down, I encourage you. What am I trying to achieve? What am I trying to achieve? What's my purpose? What is my intention? What is my goal? Why am I? Where am I headed? So we can see that an aspect of being unconscious is to not have any intention. Like there's a Chinese saying, if you don't know where you're going, the problem is you'll get there, because you're just going to end up somewhere. The problem with not knowing where you're going is you're going to end up there. So we want to be intentional, and oftentimes when we're chanting, if we're in a mindless, unconscious state, we're not intentional. We're not trying to achieve anything. What am I trying to achieve? Why are we chanting? We're chanting to become purified. We're chanting to deepen our relationship with Krishna. We're chanting to become inspired in our service. We're chanting to become purified of the contamination within our heart. Ultimately, we're chanting to awaken our eternal relationship with Krishna, Krishna Prema. And there are so many other subtleties to the chanting. Sometimes we may be begging Krishna to be empowered to engage in our service. We are begging Krishna. We can beg Krishna for so many things. Sometimes I chant, I beg Krishna to reveal to me how I to understand some aspect of bhakti, like how can I be more humble? How can I be more tolerant? How could I be forgiving? Teach me. So I'm chanting, begging, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Krishna, teach me tolerance. Krishna, purify me. You can do that from within me. So that's an intentional form of chanting. What am I trying to achieve? Sometimes I'm chanting and I'm asking Krishna, begging Krishna, that I have no taste for bhakti. I have no taste for your holy name. Please give me a taste so that I want to chant, so that I want to be with you. I want to be closer with you. Give me a taste so that the things of this world appear pale and tasteless compared to the nectar of your name, the nectar of your pastimes. There's so many ways in which we can be intentional in our chanting. And one thing that's very powerful, I'm going to tell you now something. This is special. So if you're asleep, wake up. If you're not paying attention, pay attention, because this will really help you. Are you ready? Everybody ready? Okay. Everybody said yes. Everybody is as clear as day. Okay. In the evening, before you take rest, ideally about a half hour before you take rest, write down some intention you have for your chanting the next day, what you would like to achieve. Your intention could be something as simple as, I would like to just be able to chant without becoming bored. I would like to be able to chant and just hear the name and nothing else. I would like to be able to chant and not think about what I'm going to do later or what I have to do at work or what I didn't do yesterday or what problem I have to solve. And there's so many things you could pray for, or as I said, you could pray for something deeper, to understand some anartha, some defect within you. Krishna, please, tomorrow when I chant, reveal that to me. Help me understand how to overcome it. So you create some intention in the evening. You write it down. You just write it down on a piece of paper. And you don't even have to bother with that paper the next day. If you like, you can look at that paper before you chant. But because you created that intention in the evening, what you're doing, of course, anytime, I mean, scientifically, if you create it in the evening, it's said that it gets processed by your subconscious. But still, by creating an intention, you're showing Krishna that you have a desire to be fulfilled. And of course we know Krishna wants to fulfill the desires of the devotees. He fulfills everyone's desires. So certainly when we present Krishna a spiritual desire, he's very happy to fulfill that. So we're showing Krishna, we're telling Krishna, this is something I want to achieve in order to come closer to you. Welcome Nityananda Chandradas from Dallas, Haribol. I will be in Houston Thursday. Are you going to be there for the Japa retreat? If not, you just have 2 days to get there. Of course, any of you can come from anywhere in the world. We're doing Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Oh, he says he has to stay next time. So when we express our desires to Krishna, we are showing Krishna our intention to come closer to him. And of course we know from Bhagavad Gita that Krishna likes to help his devotees, to Dami Buddha Yogam Tam. He likes to inspire his devotees. So when we show our intention to Krishna in our particular service, this is what I would like to achieve in my service, Krishna is very, very inclined to help us. Now, I'll relate to you why I think this is so important. As many of you know, we do japa retreats, and one of the things we do on the japa retreats, they're 4.5 days, and one of the things we do, level one is 4.5 days, level two is 5.5. We chant 64 rounds in level one on 1 day, and level two we chant 2 days. And what we do is create our intention the evening before. And one of the intentions that I create, because chanting 64 rounds could be difficult, because I'm not used to doing that a lot, I create the intention that it will be easy, it will flow, it will be as easy or easier than chanting 16 rounds. So the last retreat I attended was in New York several weeks ago, and I created that intention that the chanting would be sweet, it would be relishable, it would actually become more relishable as the day continued. It would just flow like nectar, because ultimately Krishna's names are so sweet, and we know that in the purified state we probably couldn't stop chanting it even if we wanted to. We see pure devotees, it's like they just chant, they can't. Like Lord Chaitanya would sometimes chant, and he went to the bathroom and he kept chanting, and he thought, oh, this is not good to chant in the bathroom. And he would say, oh, my rascal tongue, it can't stop chanting. So I was in some way praying like that. Oh, my rascal tongue, just keep chanting all day. So that was very interesting what happened at this last retreat. The day was going along and I was chanting and chanting, and I really wasn't struggling to chant. You know, sometimes even in chanting 16 rounds, even chanting a few rounds, sometimes we struggle to control our mind, and we're not feeling anything, we're not feeling a taste, and you know, we're getting bored, whatever, and we're it's not happening for us. We're not in the zone. We're not in the japa zone. It's just we're somewhere else. So I was in the japa zone, and it was, and I came to this point, and I was thinking, this is too easy. I'm not used to this. This whole mood of struggling came up in me, like, I have to struggle. This is like, it's too easy, you know, like it's never been this easy to chant this many rounds. It's like, when's it going to get hard? Krishna, you know, I want to struggle a little bit, make it harder for me. The whole day it wasn't a struggle. And of course that was my conditioning, wanting it to be a struggle. Like I felt something was wrong, that I wasn't struggling. But I realized that because I made that intention, that Krishna reciprocated, and it was amazing. So this is a very powerful process, to make an intention. And then once you make the intention, when you're chanting, to be conscious of those intentions, of what I want to achieve. At another japa retreat, I made the intention, Krishna, please teach me humility. And I've always been somewhat mesmerized by the concept of humility, mesmerized in the sense that I realize that I can't really understand humility by reading about it. I actually have to be humble. Sounds like a very simplistic statement, but there's some profound meaning to it that I can't realize it unless I am it. Anadi. Okay. Not easier. You guys having conversations while I'm talking? Like you're in school doing emailers, text messages. Okay. So, I was thinking, Krishna, teach me humility. And the intention was that I really can't understand. I mean, I can read about it, but I can't understand it unless you actually give it to me and change my mentality from being proud to being humble. You can do that. So, anyway, I chanted that day, and then after the retreat, I had an experience in which there was some rough edges in a relationship I was having with another devotee. And that devotee told me how she felt about me, what I was doing wrong. And it was so amazing that as she was speaking, I did not feel in any way defensive. And normally I would at least be a little bit defensive. Of course I know. I'm a Mahatma, so Mahatmas are not defensive, right? But I'm a Mahatma in progress, so normally I would be a little bit defensive. And the whole time she was saying what problem she was having with me, I was acknowledging. I said, yes, you're right. You're right, that's right. And as I was saying that, I was watching myself, and I was saying, how is that that I'm saying? How is that that I'm saying? You're right. And I was kind of observing that, and I said, this is amazing. And then I reflected back on that intention I made while I was chanting 64 rounds, that I wanted humility. And then Krishna, he just gave it to me. So, someone has a question? I can answer it now. Okay, what's the question?
Hines would like to know, is it necessary to chant on beads?
Is it necessary to chant on beads? Yes, even Lord Chaitanya chanted on beads. I believe it was Bhaktivinoda Thakur who said, when we chant on beads, we should think each bead we are touching, or each bead, another we should think, each bead is the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya, and we're touching the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya. So, of course, it's Tulsi. So there's benefit in touching Tulsi, and it's also, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or perhaps it was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta who said it, we're touching the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya. And, of course, the beads are there to count, to create a regulation in the number of rounds we chant. So, other devotees have had this question, and I did some research, and I found out through the whole entire history of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, even Lord Chaitanya himself, everybody chanted on beads, or knotted cloth or something. They chanted on to count. So, yes, if you're not chanting on beads, I recommend, not I recommend, it is recommended by all the acharyas in our line to chant on beads. So, I'm going to put up the three questions in case you came late. These are the three questions to ask whenever you're engaged in any kind of service.
You have to come closer.
Can you see that? I'll read it in case you can't see it. So you're engaged in some service. We use japa as an example. What's going on? For example, japa means I'm associating with Krishna. That's what's going on. What's the meaning? Oh, Lord, engage me in your service. Accept me, Krishna, my friend. Purify me, etc. And what's the purpose? What's the intention? What am I trying to achieve? I'm consciously aware that I'm chanting to become purified, to awaken my relationship with Krishna, to overcome my anarthas, etc. These are three ways we can immediately bring consciousness to any activity that we are engaged in. And if you came late, I began this session by saying that it's often and it's easy that we become unconscious. We become mindless. We do something, but the mind doesn't engage itself. And does anyone have any more questions before I go on to the next point? Yes, there's a live audience here. One person is alive in the room. Well, there's two people alive in this room, myself and Manu. So we have a live audience. So one of the things, you can ask a question anytime, I'll just go on. One of the things we notice is that it's much more difficult to give our minds to Krishna than it is to give our bodies. Have any of you noticed that? Like, you can engage in service and your mind doesn't have to be there. Doesn't have to be in the mood of service. Especially if it's a service you do all the time, then your body can be kind of come habituated to this. I had done book distribution for many years, and many of the book distributors found that at a certain point they could practically distribute a book and turn their minds off because they were repeating the same thing so often and made the same, said the same jokes and the same gestures, and they could go out and kind of disengage their minds. And that's an interesting phenomena. Welcome, Anjan. And that's an interesting phenomena because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Manmana, always think of me. One time Srila Prabhupada wrote me a letter. I asked him a question. Not one time, many times, but I asked him a question. Is it more important to think of Krishna or is it more important to do service? And then he wrote back, he wrote many things in this letter, but in relation to what we're talking about, he said, the whole point of everything is to become absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. And I was shocked when he said that. Of course, I knew that, but when your spiritual master tells you the whole point of everything is to become absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, and practically, you have a very difficult time thinking of Krishna, even while you're chanting His holy name, you have a difficult time thinking of Krishna. Even while you're doing arti, sometimes you forget Krishna. Even while you're reading His teachings, your mind wanders. So now here my spiritual master is telling me the whole point of everything is to become absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. So, and if you study our philosophy, you'll see that's the essence. It keeps coming up, the essence. Always remember Krishna, never forget Him. Prabhupada said that's the essence of every instruction. That's the whole point of every instruction. That's every rule, every regulation supports this principle. That's what we're supposed to be and think of Krishna at the time of death. That's the goal. So now we're dealing with this phenomena that we can engage in service and we don't have to engage our mind. It can be disengaged and it doesn't have to be focused on Krishna. And the body can do. Your body can go through the motions. So it's a problem. That's a definite problem. It's a common problem. Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, Manasa Deha Geha, Krishna, I give you not just my body and not just my family, but I give you my mind. So now it's interesting. We should contemplate, why don't we give our minds to Krishna? Like, I can give my body so much more easily. If that's the case, like for example, let's say you have some attachment or some thoughts that aren't really good for your bhakti, but you think about them. Some form of sense gratification that you meditate on, or some attachment you can't seem to get rid of. And you hold on to it. And then you engage in your devotional service, but you hold on to that attachment. And then if we look at that phenomena, then we can see that holding on to those thoughts giving up those thoughts is difficult. Like, I may say, get up at 4 in the morning and go to Mangal Arti. And you may say, oh, that's so hard. But like on Janmashtami or sometime, if you're not accustomed to do it, you can do it. You can get your body out of bed. Somehow or other, you can do it. But giving up thoughts which we are attached to, giving our mind to Krishna, that's much more difficult. Because that's something we enjoy on a subtle level. Oftentimes, we can enjoy sense gratification. We can enjoy things not in relation to Krishna, in our minds. And nobody can see us. And nobody can know what we're doing. We can actually engage in sinful activities in our minds and not get at least a gross reaction. The mind is the seat of lust, anger, desire, attachment. So that's why it's so hard to bring the mind around. The mind kind of wants to just go where it goes. Did you ever notice when you chant how difficult it is to bring the mind? It takes incredible amounts of energy. I mean, to just sit and chant, sit straight and chant, that takes energy. But to get your mind in line, that takes way more energy. Because the mind is stubborn. Krishna, what is it? Arjuna said it. Stubborn, obstinate, more difficult than controlling the wind. So at least I want you to be aware of what we're dealing with when we're talking about being mindful in our bhakti. We're dealing with a mind that has a tendency to have a mind of its own, so to speak. My mind has a mind of its own. It wants to dwell in what it wants to dwell. It wants to enjoy on a subtle level. It wants to be attached to what it wants to be attached to. And it doesn't always want to be conscious of what I'm doing for Krishna. So at least be aware of that. And then by being aware of that, you become aware of the need to be more conscious when you're doing service and when you're chanting. And one of the things that I've noticed in my own chanting is that you have to put all your energy into being conscious. Because if you don't, what happens? Very easily you become unconscious. Not unconscious, but you just become conscious of things other than Krishna. So who else is here? Madhu. Welcome, Madhu. Okay, now we're at the end. So should we sum up everything for Madhu? Okay, there's a saying. Tell them what you're going to tell them. Tell them, and then tell them what you told them. So, I already told you what I was going to tell you. I already told you what I told you. And now I will tell you what I told you. What I told you was that we have a tendency to be mindless, to not be focused on what we're doing when we do service, and particularly when we're chanting. Or if you chant Gayatri, also. So to overcome mindlessness, there are three questions we can ask ourselves. The first question is, what's going on? In other words, what am I doing? I'm chanting the holy name. What am I doing? I'm associating with Krishna. Krishna's present in his name. That brings us into consciousness. Prabhupada once said, first be conscious, then be Krishna conscious. So, then, what is the meaning of what I'm doing? Particularly, what is the meaning of the holy name? What does it mean? Focus. If you get nothing from what I've said in the last 45 minutes or 40 minutes, but just this one thing, what does the holy name mean? Just go deep into the meaning when you chant. That will take your japa to a whole new level. Just understand the meaning. And then the last thing, your intention. Now, if you focus, if you conscious, Krishna's here in his name, conscious of the meaning, Krishna, accept me, engage me in your service, my friend, purify me. And then you're intentional when you chant. You're focused on what you want to achieve. Purity, connection, whatever it is that you want to achieve while you're chanting, that brings you totally into consciousness of Krishna. Then those three things totally will transform your chanting. So I'm asking you tomorrow, when you sit down, ask yourself those three wonderful, empowering questions. So, question? Yes. Should I ask the question you should ask? I think the kind of a perennial question is, and this is something I face personally all the time. Sometimes we understand what to do, but we just get into a state where we're in ISKCON talk, we say we're moded out, like the lower modes of nature. What we call tamagun, the mode of ignorance, but you know, to put it in practical terms for the Western mind, just apathy, laziness, I don't care, total distraction. Just, I would so much rather be doing something else right now than doing what I'm doing, be that chanting or some other service. I just really want to go on this website now because I really want to check this out because I really want to get this new gadget, and I have to chant Hare Krishna now, and my mind is on that new gadget. So what do we do when we're in that state? Here we're talking about, okay, be conscious, ask these questions. What if I don't even want to ask the questions? Then what's the use of the questions? Okay, yes, yeah, Mahatma, this is a great talk, great questions, yeah, really going to help me. And I sit down tomorrow, and I don't even feel like asking the questions. I want to go do something else. I'm supposed to chant or do my service. I don't feel like it. What do I do? Very good question. I'm glad you asked. Now, is everyone paying attention? Because this is very important. Okay, we're getting some questions. I'm going to answer this. But before I answer your question, this is really important. This is such an interesting phenomenon because it happens to all of us. I remember I do japa retreats. I'm one of the facilitators. So, you know, as a facilitator, at least I feel I should be exemplary in my life. And I also feel that in order to go deeper into my ability to help teach about this, I need to go deeper myself. And I remember one day I was in that mood where I didn't feel like chanting. I didn't want to chant. It was like this mode of ignorance just was like this black cloud that came over me. I actually didn't want to do anything. I had just been extremely, extremely overworked, and I was in nowhere's land. So what do we do? Here's a thought, and the thought is that when we're in this situation, we can think, Krishna is now giving me an opportunity to do something I really don't want to do. And that is a wonderful opportunity to show Krishna my bhakti. If I want to do something, okay, that's nice, I want to do it. But if I don't want to do it, at that point, I have this wonderful opportunity to express my devotion to Krishna, perhaps in a greater way than if I wanted to do it. It's just like, let's say you have a thought in your mind that is eating your bhakti lata beach. It's like acid on your creeper, but you're attached to thinking about it. Now you have a wonderful opportunity because you could give up that thought, and that thought is dear to you. It's something you want to hold on to. You could give that up. So it's a wonderful opportunity to show Krishna your devotion. So when you don't want to do something, turn it around and think, wow, Krishna, through the agency of the mode of ignorance, you're giving me this wonderful opportunity to do something that I have, at this point, no desire to do. And I guarantee, if you put your energy into doing that with that thought, gradually, you will get to the desire to do that. Okay, so now we're going to go to your questions. So, who has the first question? Can you please repeat the third question? Third question is... what am I trying to achieve? Or what is my purpose? What is my goal? What is my intention? Why am I chanting Hare Krishna? What am I? You know, they say, what is the saying? Clarity is power. So, you ever heard this example? They take this world-class archer, and they spin him around. And now he doesn't know where his target is. And they just take an amateur archer. And they don't. No, they blindfold the professional archer. They blindfold him and they spin him around. And then they take an amateur archer. The amateur archer can at least see the target. Professional archer can't see the target. So what is your intention? What's your target? What are you aiming at when you're chanting? Okay. What is the next question? Does Rama refer to Balaram or to Lord Ram, to both, and also to Radharaman, the enjoyer of Radharani?
Does Rama refer to Balaram or Lord Ramachandra at the same time?
Balaram or Lord Ramachandra. Yes, he refers to both. And to Radharaman. Prabhupada said, either Balaram Ram or other acharyas have said Radharaman refers to Krishna, who's the lover of Radha. That's another understanding. Does chanting have to be audible, or could you do it in your mind? That is one way of chanting in your mind. Another way of chanting is chant very softly, like Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Or another way of chanting is chanting loudly. Now, I'll tell you a story. This will help answer the question. Maybe not directly, but I'll tell you a story. There is a person who lived next to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And this person, I believe he's alive today, and he said that because he lived next to him, he could hear Bhaktivinoda Thakur chanting early in the morning. And he chanted as if he was calling for someone. So he chanted like this, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So that was an example of a way to chant. Now, chanting in the mind is a process. It's not a process that I've ever seen that Prabhupada recommended, although it is one of the ways of chanting. So, generally Prabhupada said we should chant at least so we can hear ourselves, and sometimes he said if the mind is agitated we can chant loudly. I find myself, if I chant very quietly, it helps me control my mind. Perhaps you might find if you chant silently in your mind, it may help you control your mind. I don't like to tell people specifically to chant one way or the other. I rather would say that you experiment. I know sometimes I channel my mind when I'm extremely tired, and I'm so tired I can't even open my mouth. But usually I just fall asleep. Or if I, very sick and I'm laying down and I want to chant my rounds, I may chant in my mind. So there may be reasons. So I always recommend chant in a way that you feel you can be most devotional and focused on Krishna. Vikram, how to develop seriousness? Oh.
Up, how to develop the need to chant with attention. He said the need doesn't seem to come even though he knows that it's supposed to.
How to be serious and how to develop the need. Okay, this is a very good question. How to be serious and how to develop the need or what the sense of urgency. First, I want to address the seriousness, which could address the second question in some way. Prabhupada was once asked how to become sincere. And Prabhupada said, by being sincere. In other words, there are not three previous stages to being sincere, but sincerity is the stage. Or in other words, what Prabhupada's saying is, we have a choice. Because we can, I don't know if you've heard the saying, but there's a saying that says, to not choose is also a choice. So let's say I'm not serious. We could say that was a choice not to be, that was a choice to be not serious. And you say, no, you might say, no, it's just the modes of nature, my conditioning, yes. But ultimately, to be serious requires making a choice to be serious. I mean, at some point, every one of us decides to get serious about Krishna consciousness. And sometimes people leave Krishna consciousness at a certain point and they come back. And they come back and they said, I've decided again to become serious. So it's really, I think, if we take personal responsibility for being serious, for being sincere, then I think that is really the essence. And that's where our power comes from. There's a verse in the Gita where Krishna says, one who does good can never be overcome by evil. And if we look at that verse, one way we can understand it is we can say, one who is sincere will never be overcome by evil. That it's the sincerity of purpose that brings us to Krishna and keeps us in Krishna consciousness. Now, if you think, what brought you to Krishna consciousness in the first place? What was that thing that brought you to Krishna consciousness? If you search for that sincerity, that seriousness, and you think, well, where did that come from? That was your choice. That was your desire. That was your need. That was what you wanted. Of course, you could say, by hearing about the need to be Krishna conscious, that stimulated it, yes, of course, by associating with devotees, by chanting the holy name, by all these things. But ultimately, you took all those things upon you and you made that choice. So now if we go to your second question, how to develop the need to chant with attention, I would say it also relates to how to be serious. Because need, when we talk about need is very personal. We need to be Krishna conscious. Now, we may not realize that. We need Krishna. We may not realize that. But I think it's incumbent upon ourselves to realize how much we need Krishna. And the question is, how do we chant the need to chant? Well, there is a way. I want to stick to my point that it's our personal responsibility, but there is a way that we can create a more intense intensity of need. And one way to do that is to look at the results of chanting properly and look at the results of chanting improperly. And then multiply those results by 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. So now, for example, imagine one of your bad days of chanting japa. Of course, your worst day would be you didn't even chant. But take a day that you chanted and you didn't chant properly. And just kind of remember that day and reflect on, maybe that was today, and reflect on the results of that. Now imagine if you got those results every day, if you chanted improperly every day and you got those results every day. Now multiply that by the rest of your life. Where would you end up? Not in a good position, right? Now take one of your best days of japa. Maybe that was today. Think of a day you chanted very good rounds, or think of the day you chanted the best rounds, and multiply that by a week, a month, a year. You do that every day. And where will you end up at the end? In a very good place. Probably at the lotus feet of Krishna. So you say how to develop the need. That's one excellent way to develop the need, by seeing the consequences of my actions. There is a commercial for water. What was that water? It was water. Some water called, I don't know the name of it. What was it, water? Crystal or something. So there's a cowboy. He's out on the range, and he's riding his horse, this totally macho cowboy. And while he's riding on the range on top of this mountain cliff, he hears a voice, "Help me! Help me!" And he goes and looks over the cliff, and there's this beautiful woman hanging onto a branch over the cliff. And the cliff is thousands of feet, and she's ready to fall, and she's looking up at him, smiling. And her breasts are half exposed. And he runs back to his horse, gets his rope, and he takes a drink of this water. What's the water? Oh, you remember? Purity, clarity, something like that. And all of a sudden he has this vision of being married to this woman, and he's at home feeding a one-year-old. They're actually in a trailer. He's feeding a one-year-old, and his wife is pregnant. Her hair is in curlers. She doesn't look quite the same. And the grandmother is there giving him a hard time, and he looks totally depressed and miserable. And he immediately, instead of saving the woman, he immediately jumps on his horse and rides off into the sunset. Straight out of the Srimad Bhagavatam, right? So, of course, this was meant to be funny. Not exactly straight out, but similar, you could say, in a sense, to what Narada Muni did with Mrigari the hunter. He said, you know, you shouldn't have killed these animals. You'd either let them go or kill them all the way. And Mrigari said, no, it's a family business. This is how we do it. It's fun. So then Narada Muni said, oh, yeah, it's fun. He showed him all these animals coming back to kill him or to torture him. So Narada Muni showed him the consequences. When he saw the consequences, then he realized, no, this is not fun. I should stop doing this. So if we become aware of the consequences of proper and improper behavior, that can create a need. So next question. The need doesn't seem to come even though I know it. So just see where it's going to take you. And I think that will help you. Make the consequences clear. You can even write the consequences down on a card and put it in your bead bag. And when you sit down to chant, you can say, okay, if I chant well, these are the consequences. If I chant poorly, these are the consequences. And if I multiply that proper chanting or improper chanting by the rest of my life, there's going to be, with 2 points go off a little bit, 20 years down the road, there's a big difference, isn't there? Okay. What is the correct procedure for leaving this chat? You can't leave.
Close the chat window.
What time are we going to end the chat? What time is it now? Yeah, we're going to end any minute now.
Madhu has a good question.
Madhu, what is the benefit of chanting in the morning rather than in the evening? Well, I would say depends what time in the morning you're chanting. The problem is, if you have to go to work and school and you're chanting close to the time that you need to get ready to go, the problem is you start thinking about everything you have to do to get ready to go, or what you're going to have to do in school or work. The advantage of getting up much earlier than you need to leave or to begin what you have to do that day is you don't have to think about it. I mean, you can think, your mind may want to think about it, but you really don't. It's really much easier not to think about it. And if you tell yourself, I'm not going to think about it, it's easy not to think about it because it's not imminently around the corner. Of course, the other reason to chant early in the morning is it's a Brahma Muhurta hour, and chanting is more powerful at that time. And chanting late at night, you may not be quite awake as you would like to be. It's not that you can't chant late at night. I always feel that we need to be honest with ourselves. And if we realize that the rounds we chant late at night are not nearly as good as the rounds we chant early in the morning, then we should just acknowledge that and do whatever we can to finish our rounds in the morning. If you feel that you can chant just as well in the evening as you can in the morning, then you may want to leave some rounds for the evening. But general experience of most devotees, my experience, is the earlier in the morning you can chant, the better the environment. Just like, I'll give you an example, this is so funny. When I was young, I used to surf. And so one of the things about surfing is that the waves are better earlier in the morning for two reasons. Because it's not so windy and the wind tends to ruin the surf. And there's not as many people up. And I grew up in California, and the era I grew up in, everybody surfed. Everyone and their brother and their mother was surfing. So the beaches were totally crowded. So if you'd get up early in the morning, you'd get there before many people were willing to wake up and go out, and you'd get a lot of waves to yourself. So one morning there were about four or five of us, my friends, in one of our friends' van. And the friend who was driving was a wild man. He was like 10 times more wild than all of us. So it's like 6 in the morning, and you know, here we are, 16, 17-year-olds, you know, kind of hippies, wild ourselves, going surfing. And he turns on rock and roll in the morning. And we're like, turn that off, it's too early. So there's these drugged out surfers, you know, 6 in the morning, and we're telling them, turn off that rock and roll, it's too early for that, we can't tolerate it. So we can see, you know, the morning is, it's a peaceful time, it's the time for Satmagun. Okay, let's see, next question.
PK Das.
How can we know? Do I have to guess what PK stands for? You could tell me later.
How can we know that we are progressing in the spiritual path?
How can we know that we are progressing in the spiritual path?
In relation to chanting.
Particularly in relation to chanting? Or I could also answer it in Paripurna Das, Krishna Das. Paripurna. There are many ways we can know.
So he's saying in relation to chanting.
Oh, in relation to chanting. One of the ways we can know we're progressing in our... I think one of the ways we can know that the chanting is effective is that it's increasing our desire to be Krishna conscious, serve Krishna, and also we're becoming less interested in things outside of Krishna. I can say for myself that, I'll give you an example. This is a nice example to illustrate this. Maybe not practical for everyone, but I think it illustrates the point. I was in Vrindavan in the late 70s. I had the fortune of living there. And when you live in Vrindavan, you become introduced to a lot of esoteric leelas and esoteric ideas about Krishna. So at that time in Vrindavan, everyone was talking about so many stories and philosophy from the Goswamis and all these things I never heard and all this kind of rasik stuff and relishing all this nectar. And I really wasn't into it, and I had never really been introduced to that. And I thought, what's all this stuff? What is all this? I just wasn't into it. And then I did Govardhan Parikrama. And after Govardhan Parikrama, I was totally into it. I was like, give me all those books. I want to read everything about Govardhan, everything about Krishna, everything about this leela, this pastime, what the Goswami says about this and that. So I've also noticed that in my own life, that sometimes when I'm not doing well in Krishna consciousness, it's I'm not really attracted to reading Prabhupada's books or reading anything about Krishna. Attracted to reading other things. I'm not really dying to chant my rounds or dying to do service. So a symptom of spiritual advancement is that we're actually interested in Krishna. That Krishna, he just becomes, everything about him becomes attractive. We the things that maybe weren't attractive to us about Krishna, they all of a sudden become attractive. I remember sometimes I heard stories of Srila Prabhupada. He would be in his room and he would just look at a picture of Krishna and he would just meditate on that picture. And he would just talk about that leela or talk about how wonderful Krishna is. That's a symptom that of spiritual advancement, that, you know, Krishna is important for you. He's important in your life. He's You stop and look at him. You think about him. You see a picture and you think, oh, what is Krishna doing? That's so wonderful. Or Prabhupada would see a picture, he'd think of a verse, he'd quote a verse. Another time Prabhupada said, one easy way is just to look at sex attachment, because sexual desire is a very definite barometer of our detachment or our attachment to the material world. So that's a very easy one to look at. But our eagerness to serve Krishna, our eagerness to hear and chant about Krishna. Of course, there are other things you can look at, such as, you know, how are you doing in the humility department, and in the honoring of other devotees department? How are you doing in the forgiveness department, the tolerance department? So Prabhupada once said we should see how all these 26 qualities are developing, so we can look at those things. So there are many barometers. There, one devotee said that you can think of your bhakti like an airplane, and then you can look at so many gauges. How you're chanting is a gauge, how you're dealing with devotees is a gauge, your sadhana, different aspects of sadhana could be another gauge. So you can engage yourself. You can gauge yourself in many ways. So Anadi's signing off. He's going to chant some of his rounds. Thank you for these excellent questions. And I'm reading down the list. P.K. Das is in Canada. I will be in Toronto for the Rath Yatra. Are you going to be there? Okay, the RIF family. When we realize that we are progressing, immediately false prestige comes in the picture. Yes, I'm becoming advanced. I am better than others. I am becoming more Krishna.
Why isn't everyone else
not chanting as nicely as me? I had this realization on Lord Nrsingadev's. Okay, I have to do a confession here. On Lord Nrsingadev's appearance day, he was so kind to me. I went to Mangalartik, I sat in the temple, I was chanting my rounds. Now, I have a problem when I chant my rounds in the temple. And the problem is this: I teach about chanting, so I am keenly aware when people are not doing what they're supposed to do when they're chanting, like they're chanting and they're talking. You know, they chant a few rounds and they talk and they get up and they kind of look around and they're distracted. So it's a little bit of a problem for me, because I'll have the tendency to think, well, I know how to chant properly and you're not doing it, and you should be doing what I'm doing. So right at that point, I had a realization, and this was such a wonderful realization. Krishna was so kind to give it to me. He said, Mahatma, either you're going to think you're better than everyone, or you're going to think everyone's better than you, and you better make the choice. And at that point, I said, I think I'll choose to see everyone better than me. And immediately my mind just calmed down, and I stopped critiquing everyone's japa. And my mind just, at that point when I said everyone's better than me, and tried to feel that and realize that, my mind just became completely peaceful. And I could totally focus on my chanting, and I was not at all preoccupied with being critical of other devotees or being proud. So I think that's a valuable lesson. You know, we're confronted with this. You know, say, oh, I'm advancing, I'm doing well, now I'm becoming proud. Prabhu, either you think you're better than everyone, or you think everyone's better than you. And if you're really becoming advanced, then I think you're going to think everyone's better than you. You know, so it's a real paradox, because if you think, oh, I'm becoming advanced to become proud, then sorry to say, that's not what advancement looks like if you become proud. It's just a trick of Maya. So if we're really becoming advanced, then we're going to think, actually, I'm not advanced. I'm not becoming advanced. That would be the sign. But if we think I'm becoming advanced, then we should think, uh-oh, warning sign, red flag, I'm not becoming advanced. So there's another question, right?
RI family asked the question within ISKCON from Srila Prabhupada's perspective.
Within ISKCON, from Srila Prabhupada's perspective, are we allowed to read books by the other acharyas?
And she follows up, or he, am I allowed to read
books by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur? Prabhupada said, yes, we can read other books. He said, actually, we should read the other books, but generally, we should first have a clear, deep understanding of Srila Prabhupada's books. So the answer to that question is, what Prabhupada said, how much should we eat? And Prabhupada said, eat as much as you can digest. And in certain stages of devotional service, we may not be able to properly digest the teachings of the other acharyas because some of the things they say may be difficult to understand or may be time, place, circumstance, or may appear to contradict what Prabhupada said. So it's better to first get a deeper understanding of Prabhupada's books. But Prabhupada did say we should read the books of the other acharyas. And of course, many devotees have translated such books and are teaching those books. So that would also make it easier to understand them. Okay, when we realize that we are progressing, okay, false prestige, we answered that. How can we manage the false prestige? One thing I can say about it is you'll be infinitely more happy if you're humble. And you'll be infinitely more peaceful. And if pride is a problem, what I would recommend to do for you to do is take out a piece of paper and write down what pride is costing you. In other words, imagine that you didn't have it there. It was not in your life. And then look at your spiritual life without what you could imagine your spiritual life would be without pride, without that being a problem. And then write down what your spiritual life looks like with that in your life. And you'll see this stark contrast. And then you'll realize, actually, if I can just remove that obstacle from my path, then my path will be very clear and very direct to Krishna. So I've done that with different obstacles I have in my path in bhakti, and I've seen that it can become so clear if I just remove this attachment or this obstacle, then my bhakti can flow at a greater speed to Krishna, whereas that obstacle is like damming it up. And so when you see that clearly, it's kind of an aha moment. Even though you may relish the pride, the false prestige, at the same time you realize that the pleasure I'm getting from that, so-called pleasure I get from that, is certainly not worth the detriments I get from my bhakti. So now we go.
Got an off-topic question from Damien. Where do you find Srila Prabhupada lectures to listen to on the internet?
Okay, first, PK Das, I will be at Rath Yatra. In fact, I'm going to be the MC at Rath Yatra, believe it or not. So you'll see me there, right on the stage. And Mano, you're going to be there?
Yeah, I'll be there.
Mano's going to be there. We'll have a party. So the question, where can we find lectures?
Srila Prabhupada lectures on the internet.
Mano, where can we find them?
PrabhupadaVani.org.
PrabhupadaVani.org. Should I write that down? Oh, he's going to write it down. PrabhupadaVani.org. Okay, one thing I would like to recommend to you, to all of you, if you don't have this, there is a DVD, or a series of DVDs called Memories, is it? Siddhanta did, Memories?
Memories of Srila Prabhupada.
Memories of Srila Prabhupada. These are interviews with as many of Srila Prabhupada's disciples as this devotee Siddhanta Das could interview. I recommend you watch every one of those videos and DVDs at least 3 times. And that's like about 50 hours worth, I think. If you do that, you will have a glimpse and understanding of Prabhupada and his movement and mission in a way you could never get anywhere else. Right from the lives and realizations of the devotees, you'll hear so many instructions that Prabhupada personally gave that you will never hear anywhere else, and how they were applied by those devotees and what those devotees realized in those circumstances. And it will give you a glimpse into the power of Srila Prabhupada through the lives of his disciples and how he motivated them and empowered them. And it will give you this wonderful appreciation and understanding of what the movement was like when Prabhupada was alive. And many devotees ask me, what was Prabhupada like? What was it like to be with him? If you watch these videos, or you can get them as a, I think you can get them as an audio also, you will fully understand, or as fully understand as you can, what it was like to be with Srila Prabhupada. So you can get it on MP3s at krishna.com. Is that correct? And I don't even get a percentage for advertising it. It all goes to krishna.com. So I wasn't trying to sell something. I honestly recommend that to all of you and everyone I meet. So any other questions? Damien, he thinks I'm funny. Yes, I can be quite funny. Yes, all these items on Krishna.com. Okay. Any last questions before we...
You might want to ask some of them to restate where they're from.
Please restate where you're from. So, we'd like to see where you're from. PK Das, what, you're from Canada, what part? And where, Damien, where do you say you're from? I forgot everyone, where everyone's from. And Anadi, if you're still, Anadi, he's chanting Japa now.
North York.
Sounds North
like,
York.
Sounds like somewhere near Toronto.
Is that near Toronto? Eastern Kentucky, wow. Bhakti from Hawaii.
That's Bhakti, he used to live here.
Oh.
He just moved to Hawaii.
Hawaii, yeah. Anjan from Dallas, yeah, Hawaii, nice place. Vikram from Halifax. What's Halifax near?
Nova Scotia.
Nova Scotia,
it's
oh.
The ocean there on the Atlantic coast. Near Prince Edward Island, near Newfoundland.
It's way up there. Okay, so if there are no more questions, we'll wait a few more moments, and if not...
Please join us again, same time, same channel.
Please join us again, same time, same station. Next week... next Saturday, Sunday, Monday, I will be in Houston, returning Tuesday just in time to be with you. And I will be facilitating a 3-day japa workshop retreat. And I will be totally inspired, so you don't want to miss the inspired Mahatma. And if you're interested, go to bhagavatlife.com and you can find out more info on this retreat and other japa retreats that we have and workshops and various other programs we facilitate, such as seminars on prayer, on forgiveness, on vows, and wonderful and other important topics for our advancement. Thank you very much. We'll see you again next week. Hare Krishna.